Words appear. This film is based on a true story. Now in a sugarcane field, over a dozen men of African descent stand before a white man holding a machete.
All right, now, y'all fresh niggas, y'all gonna be in a cutting gang. Very simple. I want you to take your knife. Get in them cane, make it sing. Take the cane out. Cut my tops, clean the shucks off. Throw it on a pile for the planting gang. Now, them cane ain't gonna jump up and bite you. Don't shy back. Rocher, boys, rocher!
Later, we advance slowly through a thicket of sugarcane, pushing the long leafy green stems aside. Reaching an end of the thicket, we find a few slaves at work. Some of the men cut down the stalks, lop off their tops, and toss them on the ground. Others gather the remainders and carry them to a horse-drawn wagon parked nearby. One of the cutters performs his task with ease. Sitting beside the wagon's driver, a well-dressed white man watches the slave work. The man cools himself off with a fan, brushing aside a stalk of sugarcane as it falls near. We push through the thicket once more. Now, in a darkened room, the slaves gather for bed near a small fire burning in a hearth. Over a dozen of them huddle together on the floor. Outside, they sit around a cooking fire, quietly eating a meal. The cutter from the sugarcane field stares at his meager plate, which includes a few blackberries. He tilts his metal dish, letting the dark juice of the berries gather around the plate's perimeter. On a porch, the slave sits hunched forward, carving the tip of a stick into a sharp point. Folding linens, a female slave sits on a wooden bench about 20 yards away from him. He touches the point of the stick with the tip of his finger. At night, he sits by candlelight, dipping the stick in a metal tin. He gathers a fair amount of ink on the point of his crude pen and attempts to write on a blank sheet of paper. The instrument fails him, and he brings it back to the metal tin to readjust the point and gather more ink. Returning his pen to the paper, he tries to write again, the soft light of the candle shining on his face. Growing frustrated, he knocks the ink tin aside. Late at night, the slaves sleep huddled on the floor of the darkened room, the small fire burning. Lying among them, the male slave opens his eyes and shifts his weary gaze. He adjusts his head and tries to fall back asleep, then opens his eyes once more. Turning on his back, the slave finds a woman lying at his side. Peering at him through the darkness, the woman takes a few deep breaths, then grabs his hand. She takes hold of his wrist, pulls him toward her, then rubs his hand against her body. The slave maintains eye contact with the persistent woman. She kisses him on the lips. The woman lets go of the slave's wrist, then reaches down out of view and adjusts their clothing. Locking eyes with him, she moves her body up and down at a steady rhythm. The woman ends her sensual movements abruptly. The slave shares another long glance with the woman. She glances down, then locks eyes with him and swallows. As he remains perfectly still, she rolls away. The slave turns on his back, the soft light of the fire flickering on his glistening skin. Now, lying in a comfortable bed, the same man shares a loving gaze with a beautiful black woman who gently caresses his cheek with her fingertips. The two of them wear nightclothes. The free man rolls away from the woman. Under the light of a flickering candle, parchment paper reads, 12 years a slave. The free man opens a wax-sealed letter and removes a coiled string. He prepares a violin, turning one of the instrument's four pegs to pull the new string taut. He brushes the new string with his thumb. The musician readies a bow over his instrument. Now at a dinner party, several white couples dance. From a line of men, women choose their partners by beckoning them with a playful gesture. Wearing antebellum off-the-shoulder dresses, the women face the men and curtsy. The violinist, who wears a dapper suit, nods in appreciation. Now in a bedroom, a boy jumps on a bed as his sister plays a pipe.
All right, all right, all right, all right. Thank you for the music. Come on. Get in there. Come on. Give me a kiss.
The musician father gives his son a kiss goodnight, then turns to his daughter.
I love you, Margaret.
I love you too.
Sleep well.
He blows out two candles.
I'll take this.
He takes the pipe.
I don't want to hear any more noise.
He crosses to the door, then turns back to his young children.
Good night.
He pulls the door shut. He lies in bed with his wife.
3 weeks and 2 days.
It is the custom. I wonder what you'll do without me.
I won't stay idle.
Darling, it's good money.
If only I didn't have to share your cooking with other people.
You don't.
She kisses her husband. Daytime, the father lifts his son into an open carriage.
Be good for your mother. Okay, Alonzo?
He helps Margaret step up.
Can I get a kiss, please? Thank you.
He turns to his wife.
Travel safely.
Stay safe.
She boards the carriage and sits across from their children.
Ready?
The carriage pulls off and the father waves goodbye to his family. Words appear, Saratoga, New York, 1841. Now in a public park, the well-dressed musician walks alone.
Good day, Mr. Miller.
He tips his hat to a passerby and continues on his way.
Devil call his name, there he is now. Mr. Northup, I have two gentlemen whose acquaintance you should make, Mr. Brown and Hamilton.
Sir?
Mr. Northup, these two gentlemen were inquiring about distinguished individuals, and I was just this very moment saying Solomon Northup is an expert player on the violin.
He was indeed.
Mr. Moon is being overly gracious.
Well, taking into consideration his graciousness, your modesty, may we trouble you for a moment of your time to converse, sir?
Of course.
Later, Solomon sits with Hamilton and Brown.
A circus? That is our usual employee, the company currently in the city of Washington.
The circus is too constricting a word to describe the talented and merry band with which we travel. It is a spectacle unlike most have ever witnessed. Of creatures from the darkest Africa, as yet unseen by civilized man. Acrobats from the Orient who contort themselves in the most confounding manners.
And I myself, in aid of Mr. Brown, an internationally renowned practitioner in the art of prestidigitation.
We are on our way thither to rejoin the company, having left for a short time to make a small profit from our own exhibition.
The reason for our inquiry with Mr. Moon.
Yes, we had just a devil of a time in procuring music for entertainments. Men of true talents are seemingly in short supply.
Thank you, sir.
If we could persuade you to accompany us as far as Washington, we could give you $1 for each day's services and $3 for every night played at our performances. In addition, we will provide sufficient pay for your return here to Saratoga, 2 weeks from today.
Now Solomon steps out of a carriage with his new employers.
Welcome to Washington, Solomon.
The trio starts across a bustling courtyard.
Today?
A man tips his hat. Later in a restaurant.
Hamilton, you're too much.
Some say not enough.
Solomon, $43 all to you.
That is far more than my wages amount to.
It's been a most profitable week.
Cheers.
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 As the men drink red wine, Brown and Hamilton watch Solomon take a sip.
Another.
Hamilton tops off Solomon's glass.
Gentlemen, your generosity is extraordinary.
and your talents are undeniable. Mm.
To Solomon.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Now, in a darkened cell, Solomon lies on the floor wearing loose-fitting underclothes. He rolls onto his back. In another attempt to move, he finds his wrists shackled. He observes his surroundings, then turns onto his hands and knees. He sits back and studies the chains which bind his wrists together. He looks over the room, his face twisted in a perplexed scowl. In a brick-walled alley with Hamilton and Brown, Solomon vomits.
Oh. 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 It's all right, Solomon. There's no shame in it. No shame at all.
Brown casually spits on the ground. In his cell, Solomon makes an attempt to stand but falls on his side. He finds his ankles bound the same as his wrists, the two sets of shackles connected by a chain. He struggles to his feet. At a hotel, Hamilton and Brown help the staggering musician up a staircase.
Hamilton, we must hurry.
To a passerby.
One too many libations. Halfway there.
In his cell, Solomon finds himself chained to a wall. He yanks on the chain. Falls onto his back. In a bedroom, Hamilton tends to the ailing man, wiping his brow with a rag.
So sorry.
Oh, shh, 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 shh. We won't hear it. We won't.
Let him sleep, Hamilton.
Mm. A good night's rest. And tomorrow... Tomorrow you will feel as well and refreshed as if the earth were new again.
Hamilton, there's nothing more we can do for him.
Hamilton remains fixed on Solomon.
Such is the pity.
As Hamilton leaves the bed, Brown blows out two candles on a nightstand in the darkened cell.
Well, boy, how you feel now?
Two scruffy men enter the room and shut the door.
My name is Solomon Northup. I'm a free man, a resident of Saratoga, New York, the residence of my wife and children who are equally free, and you have no right whatsoever to detain me.
You're not any free man.
And I promise you, upon my liberation, I will have satisfaction for this wrong.
Resolve this. Produce your papers.
Solomon raises his shackled hands. The shaggy-haired man takes a step toward him.
You're no free man. And you ain't from Saratoga. You're from Georgia.
He steps even closer to the prisoner.
You ain't a free man. You're nothing but a Georgia runaway. You're just a runaway nigger.